If I fail, if I succeed, you can't take away my dignity. Because the greatest love of all inside of me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sex and chocolate.
Just hearing that is hilarious. One of my favorite scenes that Eddie Murphy has ever done.
Yes.
And that's Randy Watson and Sexual Chocolate from Coming to America.
Yes.
That boy is good. Good and terrible. So the reason why, by the way, that other voice you hear is Jim Ryan. Hiya, Jim.
Good. How about you?
Well, I'm good.
Thanks for having me back.
No, it's my pleasure. Music journalist Jim Ryan and Traffic Dude.
Yes.
has appeared on the show many times, and you can read his Chicago at Night blog on Chicago Now and follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan.
Yep.
All right. And you like to come in and talk about music, and that was a wonderful piece of music we just heard. Sexual Chocolate!
I keep seeing Randy Watson t-shirts, by the way. They're making Randy Watson t-shirts now. I love that.
No, it's just such a funny... It's my favorite part of the whole movie.
Oh, absolutely.
So anyway, Arsenio Hall is in that movie.
Yes, he is.
And plays many characters.
Yes, he does.
And Arsenio Hall, in fact, is doing two shows this weekend.
Yeah.
At the City Winery.
Saturday night,
two shows.
Yep.
And there are tickets available.
Tickets available for both shows, yeah.
And now the reason why we bring this up is because you got to interview Arsenio this week.
Within about a minute or two of the interview, it was immediately one of my all-time favorite interviews.
Tell me about it.
So he's got the two shows coming up, and what we talked about is, I mean, this is basically his return to stand-up comedy. When I saw them announce the shows at City Winery, I'm like, what is he doing? Is he telling stories? No, it's his return to stand-up. He made it pretty clear he hasn't done it regularly in 17 years. He said he remembers it clearly because the last show he left, he remembers walking through an airport in Phoenix, leaving the improv, holding his child. So he said it was 17 years ago.
Wow.
So I said, you know, did you get to flex that muscle all over the years, or, you know, did you just come right back to it? Because you hear all these comedians talk about how that's...
They got
to
work it.
Yeah. It's something you really got to hone and kind of keep sharp on. And he said he would, at charity events and stuff, people would inevitably be, hey, can you come up and do 5 minutes? He said, so it was that thing of, like, I would do 5 minutes. He goes, and, you know, you'd finish it. It just felt fantastic. So he said, you know, it was clear he needed to do a full return. And he credits Chappelle and George Lopez as being the guys to kind of lure him back into it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he's enjoying it so much. He's trying to get Eddie to do it. He kept bringing up Eddie Murphy and how he wants to drag Eddie.
Could you imagine if Eddie Murphy went on the road?
I have said for years that Eddie Murphy's immediate ticket back to A-list stardom would be to do a stand-up comedy tour.
I totally agree with you on that.
The question is, though, after watching something like Raw, could he adapt to... Because this is something I talked about with Arsenio. It's obviously there's, you know, been some changes in the way people view stand-up comedy. There's been changes in the culture.
Oh, yeah.
Could he adapt to that?
Well, the other thing is, I mean, you know, Eddie Murphy was remarkably young when he hit the top. I mean, really young, like early 20s. And he started doing stand-up when he was like 17.
Right.
So, you know, that when you're that young and you hit that thing like Raw, there's material in Raw that I find incredibly offensive.
Yeah, it's, and you can watch it now.
Like remarkably misogynistic. Right. And you know, but he was a 23-year-old kid who had any woman he wanted and had millions and millions of dollars. Now the guy's like a father. Mm-hmm. He's in his 50s. And so his worldview has probably altered completely. I think it would be interesting to see what Eddie Murphy did on stage now.
Yeah, because I think maybe that's part of the challenge, too, for him. That the reason we don't see it is he can't really go out and reprise the raw material, right?
No, you can't do that. No.
So it would be writing all new stuff and hoping it holds up. And, you know, Arsenio hasn't done it in 17 years. How long's it been for Eddie?
It's been much longer than that.
The work that would take.
It's funny that, you know, you mentioned Chappelle, because Chappelle was gone for a long time.
Yep.
And his comeback. Did you see his Netflix?
Yeah, and then I think supposedly they have that one more Netflix one coming out, which I think is going to be the culmination of the 14 shows he did at Telly Hall.
Right.
And I was at one of those.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah.
So it was fun. Just like in general, Arsenio Hall, nice guy, real
Yeah, because he was a great guy, fantastic. But I grew up fascinated by his talk show. Were you a fan?
I was.
Okay. I don't think he gets enough credit for everything he accomplished on that show.
Oh, that was a major shift in culture at that time. You know, he got really popular right before Johnny retired.
Right.
And it was different. A different demographic was watching that show. A different group of people, much younger audiences than Johnny was pulling in. I mean, no, there were a lot of touchstones on that show. And I think you're right. I think historically he needs to be given a little bit more credit.
Yeah, that's you kind of mentioned it with the younger demographic. And that was something we talked about, because when he was putting that show together, you had major stars at that point who had totally crashed and burned in the late night talk format. Chevy Chase and Joan Rivers.
Pat Sajak.
Yeah, he was pretty much taking over for Joan Rivers.
Right.
So what was interesting was to talk to him about the mindset behind putting a show together when he knew it was basically supposed to fly directly in the face of Johnny Carson and the establishment.
Absolutely. And he did that.
And he did it.
And he was also, he brought a lot of African-American musicians and artists and actors who never did the talk show circuit at all, and he gave them massive attention.
Yeah, he was really basically the first late night host to embrace rap and hip hop.
No question.
He told a story about booking LL Cool J as just, you know, he knew Russell Simmons a bit, he knew Rick Rubin a bit, and was like, hey, this guy Todd, I really like this guy, I can't have him on. He says, me and Todd was LL Cool J.
Yeah.
Nobody knew who he was.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was fascinating to watch the way he kind of united A, the youth demographic, because no late night host had done it.
Yeah.
And B, united both young, white, and black viewers.
I mean, yeah.
On any given night, you could see Bill Clinton playing the saxophone.
Well, I was just going to mention that. That was a major, major moment in his career, in that show's history and in the election.
Uh huh. And then he had Louis Farrakhan on.
Yeah.
I mean, on any given night, it was like.
Yeah.
You had no idea.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was a pretty amazing show. Do you remember the sketch they did on SNL?
No.
With Dana Carvey, you know, because Dana Carvey did Carson.
Right.
And, Phil Hartman was Ed McMahon.
Sure.
Whenever they did the thing. Well, they did one, Carsenio. And it was
vaguely remember this
it style. Was called Carsenio.
Okay.
And so Johnny came or Dana Carvey came up because he was trying to, you know, get the audience that Arsenio had.
Right.
So the sketch was about him trying to appeal to the young people and the black people who were watching Arsenio. So the show was now called Carsenio, and he came out and Dana Carvey had a high top fade and he extended his fingers.
Okay.
You know, because he's got the fingers and Ed had a kid in play haircut. and he was trying to do like hip material, but it was still Johnny Carson. It's one of the funniest sketches you'll ever see. And that was done at the time when Arsenio was like hugely popular.
Oh, that's great.
And so the SNL just nailed it.
He talked a ton about Johnny Carson because he said, you know, everybody looks back at that time and you think about the late night wars and the books that were written and that kind of thing. But he said he got along fantastic with Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon, that their relationship was Johnny identified that both of those shows had two different personalities and that there were guests he thought were funny that he couldn't have on.
Yeah.
And he would send Ed to recommend it to Arsenio.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think of a specific one. They're in my thing, but he said, you know, Johnny understood that his crowd was Stephen Eady and Alan King. And he would if he thought someone was young and funny, he would funnel them to me. He goes, so everyone thinks that we had that, you know, kind of adversarial thing.
Right.
It wasn't the case at all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Arsenio Hall is at doing his stand-up back in the saddle again on Saturday, this Saturday, April 29th at City Winery. Two shows, and the tickets are available. And you can read the full interview that Jim did with Arsenio at Chicago at Night blog on Chicago Now.
Correct.
All right, cool. Let's take a break. And, Jim, you went to the Exhibitionism.
Yes.
The Rolling Stones exhibit at Navy Pier.
Wrote about that for the Daily Herald. Interviewed the curator and interviewed Jerry Michelson, the co-founder of Jam Productions.
Cool.
It was cool.
All right, cool. We'll come back and we'll talk about that. We got a break here for, you know this. We have to break for weather and traffic. You're not going to give us the traffic, though. Esmeralda will. Yeah. This is a jam right here. Dan, we were able to squeeze one triple play Thursday in.
Because it tied in both with our guests.
Because it tied in with our guests. So Todd put in his Triple Play Thursday request. He wanted the Stones, and he's celebrating his 50th birthday tomorrow. Happy birthday, Todd. Welcome to the 50s. I'm 50. I could like to kick and stretch and kick. So anyway. All right, Jim Ryan is here, and the reason why, besides the fact that we did the Triple Play Thursday for Todd and his birthday, that's the Stones, and currently there's an exhibit at Navy Pier called Exhibitionism, and it's a Rolling Stones exhibit, and you went. Tell us about it.
It's really cool. I want to go back, actually, because I went, they did the media preview, and they were still putting the finishing touches on it for, I mean, like literally guys on ladders hanging stuff up within the exhibit. But it celebrates, you know, not just the Stones' impact on music, but on just general pop culture. So fashion, film, art, music. Because I think people forget, you know, I've took for granted their relationship with art and how seriously they took that. You know, Andy Warhol doing album covers and that kind of stuff. I mean, it wasn't just throw an album together like I think it is today.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a real commitment to that stuff, and it's expressed at Exhibitionism.
Mm. What are some of the other cool things that are in there?
I loved, in addition to the album cover, they finish up, they've got replica stages from some of their bigger tours, so Steel Wheels and Bigger Bang and Bridges to Babylon, which is really cool. But they also recreate the apartment that Mick Jagger, Brian Jones, and Keith Richards lived in 1962 before they got popular, so it's a dump.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They recreate Olympia Studios where they do everything in the Sympathy for the Devil movie in the film, where they're doing that kind of stuff. So they recreate the whole studio in there.
How big of an exhibit is it?
So it's 18,000 square feet.
And oh, my God.
Nine rooms. So, yeah, this is not just, like, memorabilia hanging on the walls.
Man.
Yeah, they, like, recreate actual Rolling Stones environments. It was really cool.
Now, is it touring? Is Chicago, or is it Chicago its home?
It's been in New York, and it's been in London. Mm-hmm. And there's only four scheduled North American appearances. Chicago's the second of the four.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's one of the, perhaps the most obvious choice for North America, given the Stones, you know, in the influence of blues
Chess
music.
Records. Yeah. Oh, yeah, no question about
it. All of that stuff is amply represented.
That's very, very cool. And it runs through,
July.
Through July. Yeah. Okay, Exhibitionism, and that's at the Navy Pier, and definitely worth seeing. Very, very cool. You know, I went to the, years and years and years ago, I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. Have you been?
No, but that's interesting to say, because the woman who curated it, Eileen Gallagher, and this is all my Daily Herald piece, you can find it at dailyherald.com.
Okay.
She curated the grand opening of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum.
Ah.
And curated stuff at Library of Congress.
But, wow.
So.
Well, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the thing I wanted to notice was they had Stone stuff, obviously.
Sure.
They had Rolling Stone stuff in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in the museum.
I'll be darned.
Shocking. But the thing that I noted, and I know this just is so dumb, how they had Mick Jagger's costumes.
There's a lot of that at Exhibitionism, too. There's a whole room of it.
The smallest, the skinniest man that has ever lived. Yes. I remember walking up to the costumes going, this is a child's costume.
Yeah.
They're so. Is it like that?
There's an entire room of it because they none of. I loved this part. None of them saved anything, but the one guy that saved stuff was Mick Jagger. And what did he save? His clothes.
His clothes, of course.
Like that speaks volumes.
It's
I
just.
Think.
It's amazing. It's startling how small is the size of the wardrobe.
Well, and then you remember some of those fashion choices too. I mean, like we talked a lot about in my piece at the Daily Herald the surprise appearance they did with Muddy Waters and Buddy Guy at the Checkerboard Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
It was a surprise thing they did. They stopped in and did it during the Tattoo U tour.
Right.
And if you remember that, because they've screened it a million times on PBS, Mick Jagger is wearing this like red jumpsuit. And it's like, it takes the, as cool as that appearance is, this Blues Summit, the Stones, and Muddy Waters, and all these guys. And Mick Jagger looks like he, you know, is about to go run laps.
Right. Ridiculous. Well, it was 1981, so there's a...
True.
Yeah. All right, before we let you out of here, you saw The Revolution, Prince's backup band, The Revolution.
It was so great.
They played two sold-out nights at the Metro this past week.
Sunday and Monday.
And it was all the original cast, all the original members of the band.
Yes, it was. They brought out a guest vocalist, but otherwise, Wendy and Lisa did a lot of the singing. And, man, it was absolutely fantastic. I assumed it would be good, but I never saw Prince with The Revolution. I've seen Prince.
I was lucky enough to – I saw Prince twice on the Purple Rain Tour. So.
I'm so jealous of that.
Yeah. And I saw Wendy and Lisa solo twice.
That's – like, Wendy can shred.
She's great.
I have no idea what a phenomenal guitar player
she is.
She's
great, man. She's great.
There was a segment in the middle of the show that stole the whole show for me because – so Monday night was, you know, Prince, it was almost a year to the day Prince died. It was last Friday. So they were a little emotional. But in the middle of the show, Wendy and Lisa did a version of Sometimes It Snows in April.
Oh.
Just acoustic guitar and piano. That was it. I've never heard the Metro
so quiet.
Like you could hear a pin drop.
That's beautiful.
And they went from that, which is what about... that song in the film,
Parade. It's about
his character dying.
Yes,
right?
It's about his character dying. Yeah,
and they went from
Under the Cherry Moon.
They went from that directly into Let's Go Crazy, with you know the beginning of that with the funeral organ and him talking about the meaning of life and everything.
Man,
that to me was a powerful.
Yeah,
but Wendy slayed all the guitar solos on Let's Go Crazy. So if anyone doubts that. They can pull off this stuff without him playing guitar. Oh my God, they can.
Both Wendy and Lisa. I mean, I love their. You know, I am a huge fan of their solo work. Like their first solo record came out in 1986.
Okay.
And I think there were three more after that. And now, as we were talking about this off the air, now they mostly concentrate on soundtracks.
Right.
Like they do soundtracks. Wendy's wife is a filmmaker.
Okay.
She made High Art with Ally Sheedy.
I didn't know this.
Lisa, I always forget her last name. It's weird that she's with Elisa, but it's not that Lisa.
Yeah, right.
So she scored a couple of films for her.
Okay.
And they did the music for Heroes, the TV show.
I got to go back and listen to these solo albums.
They're great, especially the first one. And Prince wrote half, wrote a lot of the, you know, helped out a lot of the music. He doesn't appear on the album, but he wrote a lot of it.
As he did for so many bands.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I knew it would be good, but he was even better than...
I went in assuming it would be pretty cool, but that to me is, that's my favorite part of Prince's career, and I know it's easy to say that because it's the big hits, but the way he took funk and combined it with kind of psychedelic elements with the keyboard and stuff, I mean, I don't know that I've ever heard anything else like that.
That's cool. I'm jealous that you went, man.
It was good.
That's very cool. All right, Jim, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You can read all of his stuff at Chicago at Night blog on Chicago Now, and the Exhibitionism at Rolling Stones exhibit is at the Daily Herald.
Yep.
All right, Jim, thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up, and then Esmeralda and I will have a battle of celebrity name game. That's coming up.